Money Radio. Thanks so much for joining us. Pleasure now to welcome David Smick. He is the chairman and CEO of Johnson Smick International, which is a financial market advisory firm, editor and publisher of the International Economy magazine. And he's written a couple of books. The first was The World is Curved, the new book, The Great Equalizer, How Main Street Capitalism Can Create an Economy for Everyone, The Great Equalizer by David Smick. David, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's great to be with you.
Let's start with this basic idea. What are we talking about when we're saying Main Street capitalism versus some other type of capitalism?
Well, it all started, I saw a piece of data well over a year ago, and it said that the average American, half the country is essentially insolvent, that they can't afford a $500 bill for an unexpected car repair or medical emergency. And I began to think, you know, just gut feeling that there's going to be big changes in this country. And then I looked and thought, you know, gee, incomes have remained flat since 1998. So it's been, two administrations, Republican and Democrat. And what I discovered was that what really is troubling the average folk was not it was not the level of the stock market or the GDP growth rate. They were worried about something called social mobility, which is this, you know, 30 years ago in this country you had a 30% chance or 25% chance of rising to the top 25% of income-earning families, which was frankly my story. Today you have a 5% chance. And I began to say, well, why is that? Well, a large reason is that, you know, business startups are happening at half the rate that they were 15 years ago in particular. And why are business startups not happening? Why, and particularly, why when people start up a firm, they're not going public? And, you know, the vast majority of new job opportunities come after a small firm goes public. And I began to look at all the reasons why the entrepreneurial, the innovative sector of our economy was holding back. And it dawned on me that there were a number of reasons, but one main one was that I call it a corporate capitalism had taken over the country, particularly in the last decade, and it was stifling the Main Street part of the capitalism. And I remember during the campaign, the Democratic Socialist candidate Bernie Sanders saying, you know, capitalism is rigged. And I kind of looked at that and I said, well, in some ways, he's right. There is a certain rigging of the system, particularly when you look at it's an unlevel playing field. When you look at what's happened, particularly since the financial crisis in banking and also in the corporate sector, Goliath always wins. The big guys the big banks seem to do okay, but at the expense of the workhorses of the small business and startup sector, the regional and community banks that faced all kinds of restrictions, and as a result, I think we've got this dichotomy, and I'm arguing that we need to get back to a more Main Street capitalism, less Wall Street financial engineering, and more innovation, and more recognition that economic growth and a really vibrant economy and a high-growing economy is going to come from the bottom up a lot more than it is from the top down.
You're right. Sanders did talk about the idea that the economy is rigged, and it feels that way, I think, to a lot of people. He wasn't the only one who said that.
Right. Donald Trump said it as well.
Although they come from opposite ends of the political spectrum. So
right.
What do you mean by Main Street capitalism?
Well, I'd say it's a mindset that I'm hoping that the Washington political culture, the policymaking culture in Washington can adopt that says we need a level playing field all around. And it's a mindset that says in finance that we need to set the conditions such that there's ample financial liquidity, there's oxygen for our small business sector and our startup sector. We need to look at the regulatory culture. There's so many cases where large firms deliberately manipulate the regulatory system, I would say the patent system even, and sometimes even the antitrust system, at the expense of competitors or to keep newcomers from entering the marketplace. When you look at the so-called centers of American high-tech innovative prowess. You would say, what, Google and Facebook? Google and Facebook today spend more money on high-priced lawyers and lobbyists and buyout specialists to stifle competition, to keep newcomers from entering, to keep newcomers from doing what they did, which is to engage in the kind of normal creative destruction of a capitalist system that's thriving. They spend the money on to stifle competition, not to engage in new research and development and in new products. And I think that's Main Street capitalism is the capitalism of true competition in a fair arena in which the guy on the bottom has a chance of rising up. I have a favorite economist friend, Ned Phelps, who is won the Nobel Prize, and he wrote a very interesting book. He said, and it was his main thesis was that when you look at the history of economics. And you say, when did the big rises in per capita income come? I mean, you look back over the last 500 years, you would think it happened during the Enlightenment, right? But it didn't. It came even during the big periods like the Enlightenment, where you would think the average person would rise up. That didn't happen. It really only happened from the period 1820 to really up to the First World War, where you had four countries, one U.S. was one of them, that kind of engaged in what Phelps calls a mass flourishing, in which it wasn't just the big innovation breakthroughs, the technological breakthroughs of the time. It was that the entire population became engaged in mass flourishing. They became idea machines. And even Lincoln, who was president in the middle of this period, noticed that the American people have this intense curiosity for the new. And they were very, very much entrepreneurial. And I would say we need to get back to that. And so when I say innovation, we're not talking about an innovation explosion just from Silicon Valley or from the, handful of other tech centers. I'm saying across the country where people feel the kind of confidence to strike out on their own and to often do commercial applications of other breakthroughs. I mean, but again, Main Street capitalism is a mindset that's a high growth mindset that says if we insist that our political leaders instill in the policy culture this sense of fairness and this sense that people ought to be encouraged to strike on their own. And I would say this: when you look at the United States compared to the rest of the world, we have a lot of advantages. I mean, there's a lot of pessimism out there, but I'm the optimist because I think the United States. But there's no other country in the world where people quit their jobs and strike out on their own, and they mortgage their homes and they borrow from family and friends based on an idea that they want to commercialize, knowing that 90% of the time they're going to fail, but they just have to do it because that's in our DNA. And I'd say Main Street capitalism needs to kind of encourage that. And I would look back in the last 10 to 15 years and say we've been going in the opposite direction. We've been going in the direction of Europe, and we should really go back to the thing that has really made this country exceptional.
Okay, that gives us an idea of Main Street capitalism. It is more of a level playing field, or as the title implies, a great equalizer, a sense of fairness which seems to be missing in America right now. As you say, you've got these large corporations, they control the patent courts. You've got, even when the Federal Reserve does something like lowering interest rates to near zero, which would be intended, you would think, to stimulate economic activity. Instead, what seems to be happening is that they move their profits offshore in inversions, and then if they do bring it back, they bring it back in and use it to repurchase shares and buyback deals or some sort of a merger. It's difficult for someone on Main Street to compete with that. So let's get to the idea of what is the great equalizer here? How do we go about breaking out through some of that inequality and leveling the playing field?
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And my book goes into details about how, if you want a perfect example of corporate capitalism at its finest, or let's say at its worst, it would be the period since the financial crisis, where, as you say, I mean, everything that was done to preserve the large and the status quo. And you saw it with the Fed's approach to the banks. We now have 8 zombie banks, heavily, heavily regulated, heavily risk averse, and the rest of the banking sector below that has been decimated. Now you once had 45% of the of banking assets were held by these dozen or so banks. Now they hold 75% to 80%. So I think you make a very good point. So what do we have to do? Well, first of all, we need a I agree with the whole approach. We need tax reform, and we need a tax reform that is with an eye toward small businesses and startups. Now, ask yourself this: if you look back over the last decade, and you say last 20 years, if you ran a private equity firm on Wall Street, you were a billionaire. You paid a tax rate on what they call carried interest of half the rate that someone out in a small town outside of the of New York or outside of the major large metropolitan areas who owned, say, 5 dry cleaning shops and employed 100 people. That person paid a tax rate and pays the tax twice as high. So I think we put so much emphasis on, oh, how do we reduce the cost of capital, but not enough emphasis on what does it take from a tax standpoint to encourage someone to make it, not that the tax rate is everything, but it certainly gives them the same kind of advantages that other sectors of the economy has had. If you look at bank regulation since the financial crisis, there's just no denying that the restrictions on banks, their capital restrictions, have made it such that a small startup, I mean, the requirements they have, 3 years of capital to qualify for a loan it's just almost impossible to get a loan as a startup. So essentially, we've taken, because a bunch of corrupt Wall Street banks, manipulated their balance sheets with this, what I call trust me paper, 8-10 years ago, that led to a financial crisis. We now have a situation where a startup or someone who was with a young company of great promise but undercapitalized, they can't get loans, and they can't get loans because they're restricted by a very onerous tax system. So I would say, when the Republicans and hopefully they can get some bipartisan agreement on this with the Trump administration to do regulatory reform, that they keep an eye on that. I think the Fed, we have legislation that tells the Fed to concentrate on employment and price stability.
That's part of their mandate.
I would add a third part to the mandate. I would say the Fed should make sure that banks are the regulatory policy for banks is not slanted so heavily in favor of large corporations and other large banks and to the disfavor of the entrepreneurial and startup element of the economy. That would have a huge, huge impact.
Okay. But I also think hang on just a moment. We'll take a quick break. As we continue the conversation, we'll take a look at some other policy changes that you propose to help us achieve equalization. The Great Equalizer. That's the title of the book by David Smick. We'll continue in just a moment. Money Radio. Thanks so much for joining us. We're talking with David Smick. He is the author of The Great Equalizer, How Main Street Capitalism Can Create an Economy for Everyone. The Great Equalizer. We were talking about ways to level the playing field, the equalizer. You mentioned tax reform. You mentioned that the Federal Reserve should do something with the banks. Of course, the Federal Reserve has two mandates, price stability and job growth. And even though they are a regulator of financial institutions, they don't seem to relish that role very much or do too much other than come up with some regulations that, quite frankly, seem to be counterproductive at times. So what policy changes are you proposing in the Great Equalizer?
There's a piece of legislation called Dodd-Frank that was put in after the financial crisis. And, of course, the people who are, you know, who had sponsored Dodd-Frank and voted for it, I'm sure I would say, look what Wall Street did. The financial crisis brought a lot of harm and hardship to average folk, and I agree with that. But, you know, it's very tough when you're regulating to have these, the Cinderella approach where you know, it's not too much, it's not too little. And I think in this case, the regulation, as followed through by the Fed, just had so much of it fixated on the money, on the large money center banks, and what they represented as a systemic risk to the entire financial system, and not enough to whether their actions were producing, you know, financial suffocation at the lower level. And I would certainly go at that. Now, in the case of a small firm, as I said before, of going public, so many of the the bulk of net new job opportunities come when a small firm goes public. And as an aside, people say, why do you like startups? And I said, because unlike multinationals, three out of every four jobs they produce happen overseas, startups happen in the United States. And so they tend to be heavily labor-oriented or worker-oriented, so they produce a lot of jobs. But the big ball comes when the company goes public. And as I'm sure your listeners know, that, when we had the Enron scandal, almost 20 years ago, we put in a series of regulations that Enron people were crooks. So unfortunately, we put in these regulations that make it very, very expensive to take a firm public. I mean, anywhere it can get up to $3 million of legal fees and other that are involved. And a typical small business doesn't have that quite often. Companies that want to go public usually are underfinanced. It's a great idea, but it's underfinanced. And that's usually the case. I hear it over and over and over again. So what do you do? Well, the Kauffman Foundation, which I think does the best research on this whole question of small business development and startups, they said, why not make it simple? If you have a business and your board is willing to vote to say, we take the full risk of because it's our money, and if you have 70% of the board votes for this, you can choose not to adhere to the onerous record keeping and other highly expensive requirements of the regulation that came in after the Enron scandal, and you can suspend that. So you can say, I'll take the risk, but at least I'll be able to go public. And then once I get to a certain size, then you can even, as a compromise, meet the regulatory standards. But you got to do something. You got to do something for these firms.
The Great Equalizer by David Smick, How Main Street Capitalism Can Create an Economy for Everyone. The Great Equalizer, David Smick. Some interesting ideas in this book, David. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing.
Okay, thank you.